So I want to start by telling you a little story from the old text. The Buddha taught for 45 years, and so there's hundreds and hundreds of encounters that he has with people, conversations that he has about the practice and wisdom and the opening of the heart and many different conversations. And sometimes he meets pretty colorful characters. And there's this young man that comes to talk to him at one time that I like. I like the character himself, and the exchange is very profound, very beautiful. Well, you'll see for yourself. But and I'm going to paraphrase here. I paraphrase a lot, so I hope it's okay with you. So this young man, his name is Rohitasa, and he's a very... you have this expression, eager beaver? Like, he's really like, in the text it says he comes to the Buddha and he bows respectfully and he sits next to him, and then he asks him a question, and he says to him, and in the text you can feel how much energy he has and curiosity and how much desire to understand. And so he says with full of energy, he says, is it true? Tell me here's the question. Can we reach the end of the world by traveling? That's what he asked the Buddha. And the Buddha, very calm, very balanced guy, says, no, I don't think you can reach the end of the world by traveling. And Rohitasa had very different energies, like a little bit like me sometimes. Maybe that's why I connected with the guy. He says, oh my God, this is amazing. This is extraordinary. This is fantastic. So I ask you, can we reach the end of the world by traveling? And you answer your answer is so simple, so straightforward. You say, no. You cannot reach the end of the world by traveling. I'm amazed. This is so clear an answer. Like, I asked this and you answered that, and it's like really clear. It's like this in the text. It's so fun to read. And then Rohitasa, he says, I have to tell you, in another life, okay, this is where we bring the Buddhist cosmology in there, but anyway, he says, at some point, I had a lot of power. I had amazing power in my mind, and I could actually travel, you know, with one big leap, one step. I could go from the Eastern Sea to the Western Sea. I could do that with my mind. I had a mind strong enough that I could do that. And so I had this idea. I'm going to reach the end of the world. So I just went. And step, you know. And he said, I was walking like crazy. And you see the size of step I could take. And I was traveling. And this is in the text. He says, I almost didn't stop. I lived for hundreds of years. And I almost didn't. I stopped, you know, to eat and rest a little bit and to pee and defecate. This is in the text. I'm not, you know, don't blame me for that. He says that I stopped a little bit here and there, you know, but basically I was just going to reach the end of the world, you know, and I ended up dying without reaching the end of the world. And so I ask you, is it possible by traveling to reach the end of the world? And there you go. You say, no, it's not possible by traveling to reach the end of the world. And I tried, and I know, but I ask you and you say, no. It's amazing. I'm flabbergasted. That's my translation here. But he says something like, I'm amazed. This is extraordinary. And it's this very short exchange. The Buddha says very little here. He says, no, it's not possible by traveling to reach the end of the world. Okay. It's almost finished. But that's when, for me, it gets really interesting. It's the Buddha, in his very calm and we can imagine, in his very balanced manner, says, he adds at the end of the conversation, he said, no, it's not possible by traveling to reach the end of the world, but I also say that it's not possible to reach the end of suffering without reaching the end of the world. And it's in this fathom-long body that one can travel the world and reach the end, know the world, the cessation of the world, you know, and the cessation of suffering. It's within this form, this physical form, with its perceptions and its thoughts, that the end of the world can be reached. There's a beautiful silence. Like, I don't know if it does that to you, that, like, when I reach that part of the story, that's why I like to put a lot of energy at the beginning, because when we get to that part, to me, it's very, very deep teaching. Like, there's so many things that I'm probably going to talk for an hour about this. I have many things to say around this, I think, because I think it's fascinating, because it talks about this practice. And in a way, the thought that I was having earlier, thinking about this again, was like, in a way, saying in meditation, you're not supposed to go reach amazing land and leave your body. And this is not, like, let me talk to you about one kind of practice that is extremely simple. What I was talking about at the beginning of the evening here, and that many of you know about, this very simple practice of being in this body, so that we can know all there is to know about world and world making. And so it refers to what I was saying earlier, when I was saying we sit here and we can go off and create a world, the world of tomorrow, the world of next week, the world of the rest of my life will be like this. I'm no good, or I'm so hot, I'm so good, and I so have it because something happened at work or in my life that this is going to be like this for the rest of my life, you know. And we create a world. It's a projection, it's a perception, you know, it's thoughts, it's made up world. Yeah. Welcome to our world. And so, the Buddha says that, he gives this very simple instruction. He says, be attentive to this body here, that has this, to this form, and you'll discover a lot about the world making, and suffering, stress, and the end of stress. So this is the practice that we're invited to do in this meditation, is just to be attentive in a very, very simple way. And maybe I'll start by talking just a few minutes about the body, attention to the body here. And then other teachings, it's presented as the being attentive to the body as the best friend, as the best friend we can have, the body and the attention to the body. Why? Because the body is always there. It's never going to lie to us. So when we pay attention, we'll discover. Do you remember earlier? So I'm going to refer back maybe to some of the things I said here, but I know many of you have a practice and you can refer to your own experience and understanding, of course. But earlier I said, you know, as we sit here, as you're attentive to sound, I think that's how I started, attentive to sound, as you listen to sound and silences, notice the state of your mind. This is through the body here meaning the five senses of hearing, seeing, tasting, smelling, and the touch, the feeling of the sensation. But as we stop, even now, and listen to sounds, sound might become apparent, or silence. But also, given enough time, the state of our heart mind would become apparent. If there is impatience, or what is it getting at? You know, come on, make your point. You know, in the listening, it would become apparent. Or if there is sorrow and grief that is either was there or given a little space would come back, you know, would arise, then we could have access to this by listening to sound. Oh, this heart is heavy. Or, oh, there is spaciousness. In the mind is not reactive right now. It's life is simple. In a way, right now, yeah. And then, in this silence, or this hearing, could come the, yeah. But this weekend, we're really gonna take care of the garden because we're, you know, you could see the arising of the world, yeah. In the instruction, the basic instruction for meditation, the Buddha says, drop all concerns for the world. I love this instruction. Because for me, what it, the way I understand this is drop all concern for Pascal's, the creation of Pascal, and be just a body sitting, hearing, sensing what it is to be here now, or sensing the quality of attention that is either intermittent or stable. Feel the calm or the fear of calm, the avoid the kind of agitation that wants to avoid. No, let me think of something. Yeah. So drop all concerns for the world and discover what it is to have a mind, heart, and body here now. Extremely simple. So the body as a friend. Yeah. And an image that is often used is the image of a bottle, of a bottle, and it says in the text, the Buddha says, if the bottle is full, then Mara, the personification of the difficult states of mind, Mara cannot come in because it's already full. And so the analogy is the body that is suffused with attention. You know, when there's a presence to the five senses, or the sometimes when I say the body, will probably have the idea of more the touch, but any sense when the awareness, in French we say for mindfulness we say pleine conscience, very close mindfulness, pleine conscience, fully conscious of having a body, which we usually don't do. We use the body as a tool. You know, we're not in the body very much. Some of us are for some reason, but mostly we're in the world of ideas a lot. And so when the attention is fully in the body, it says it's like the bottle being full of water. And if there's no attention to the body, it's like the bottle being empty. So it says Mara can come in easily. So if my attention is kind of intermittent on the body, so I'm, he wants me to be aware of sitting. Okay, sitting, yeah, I know sitting. Yeah, sitting feels like this. But I can't believe this person didn't call back. They really should call back. You know? And then there's a world making and the stress arising also. Yeah, and we can maybe become aware of that. Usually we don't. We just get caught in that story. Yeah. So it says that when we develop, cultivate this attention to the body, then we're protected from story making. Yeah. And it makes life a lot more simple. And if I have to think of something, then I become, maybe I have the choice to. Let me think about this unresolved business, how I'm going to go about garden or not received call, or, you know. But usually that's not how it happens. We're more slaves to this. It takes us. We don't choose to plan. Planning happens, you know, constantly. And we plan, tomorrow morning 8 o'clock, I'll do this. Yeah, tomorrow morning 8 o'clock is a good time to do that. Yeah, that's when I'll do this. 8 o'clock is about a good time. 8:30, you know. Sometimes we feel people will say, but I love planning. They say, I love planning. Yeah, but also there's a gratification in it, but it's pretty cheap, kind of like low quality kind of happiness, you know. There might be other kind of happiness than the kind of slavery to the same kind of five thoughts, you know, like, or resentment if it's not planning, or, you know, I'm no good, or I'm so good, or, you know, whichever one, yeah. And so the invitation to drop in the body and be aware of what's happening can really protect us from world making. So there's a seclusion there. That's one word that is used that is beautiful. We can develop some contentment. Suddenly it becomes so, you know, so complete to empty the dishwasher. Instead of emptying the dishwasher so it's emptied, or washing the dishes so it's washed, it becomes something that is where there can be presence in there. There can be ease that can arise in their present fullness of life, being embodied, you know. Incarné in French, carne, meat, in the meat. Yeah. So in this way, it says the body is a. Be a good friend. But that's not the only thing. Also, being attentive to the body can reveal a lot. That's where that can give birth to a lot of wisdom in there. Because when we're attentive to the body, we start to see the impermanent nature of phenomena. Yeah? So earlier when I was guiding a bit the meditation, I know some of you are might not have been listening. It's not a problem. I'll repeat. But I was saying, you know, be attentive to the arms, or bring your attention in the arms and hands. And let's let go of the idea of hand or the image of hand and find what is the actual experience. So the meditation is very much at the experiential level. We drop under the concept, hand, I know hand, I've had hand for years. What is he talking about? And we discover the aliveness in there, you know. That whatever it is there, the radiation of heat or tingling, even now. And with given enough attention or an extraordinary attention, not the attention that is superficial, usually just to complete a task, you know, like, okay, you know, the cup is there, grab the cup, drink. But the attention that is extraordinary, oh, hand reaching. What we discover is that this experience here, this hand here, is lived only for a moment and died. And then there's another hand here to be discovered. And another one there. It's not the same hand. From the point of view of experience, from the point of view of living, that's amazing that it's gone all the time as I do that. For me, a practice that I like is to bow, the bowing. And sometimes it's actually not so devotional. Let's keep it a secret. It's an embodiment practice. Just bowing, because even at the end of the sit, I love that. Just to bring the hands like this and do this at the end of the sit and bring them back. Even now I say it. It's like he's really into practice, this guy. I get a little bit emotional. Because it's amazing. The experience of hands here is gone. And here's a completely new experience. Of course, if I'm in the kind of ordinary mind attention, it's like, what is he talking about? Or, you know, like it's bow. I know bowing, you know, we do this. I've been practicing for 10 years and at the end we bow, you know. But if I'm attentive, it's amazing. It's completely gone. And then, oops, whoa. New experience here. That brings a lot of richness in life, you know. There's this, I'm going to really read it instead of paraphrasing, because I know I have it here. It's one of my favorite. Some of you will know it. By Paul Reps. It's called, if I do find it, yes, it's called Grass Blade Experiencing. This is the law. No sames. No same leaves, pebbles, persons, places, times, faces, grasses. Whoever disobeys the law gets bored. This is very much talking about meditation. Earlier I was saying this is my first teacher said it for many years, like I heard it hundreds of times. To me it's one of the most beautiful use of language. He'd say, we've never been here now before. And for me, it was really like a wake-up call every time. God, I just thought that I'd been here before, you know? But I've never been here now before. And now. And now. If I live in this way, I don't break the law. I don't get born. Because that's completely new. And completely gone also. The moment you were waiting here for us to start the evening, whatever, you know. If you were waiting, you might not have been waiting, you might have been living, you know. But if you, anyway, whatever you were doing, it's completely gone as far as the Big Bang, you know. It's just, it doesn't exist the moment when we were here half an hour ago or so. And now there's this moment. And if there is attention to the body, it can become very clear, very tangible. That's the whole idea of meditation, to make it tangible, to enter a different world, a world that is much more in line with what's actually happening, that the sensations are gone, even if they're similar, even if it's still the same kind of pressure on the butt, let's say. That's what can fool us. It's the similarity from one moment to the next. But the pressure is new. The old pressure is gone. Yeah. And so is the present moment, the moment of consciousness, the knowing, the moment of knowing is always gone, gone, gone. To me, it speaks of death. There's a teaching in death there. Oh, the moment is always gone. Why would I fear death? Suddenly it becomes a little strange. Because I experience it several times a minute. Gone. Gone and new. And also unknown. If we become aware like this, we actually don't know what's coming. You might have in your mind the idea, begins at 7, 8:30 should be done, 9 o'clock at the worst. <You know? laughs> So I pretty much know what I got myself into. It's safe. Well, we actually don't know. We have no idea what is going to happen with this evening. I mean, we can make assumptions, have ideas about it, but the fact is it's not there. The future is not here, you know. And so if we have this extraordinary attention, especially at the level of the five senses, that can teach us a lot. But as you can see, it needs a calming of the mind, no? We cannot do this as we're caught in our ideas about stuff, you know. All my ideas about me and what I want to do and all this. If there is that level, then that's the level I live at. The other level is not so accessible. So that's why in meditation we pacify the mind, we calm the mind, we gather the mind, unify the mind, so that we can have access to that other reality. Wow. And I can even be in the middle of, like, let's say, conflict, and suddenly it becomes rich. Anyway, so that's attention to the body. One other thing that becomes apparent, not just the impermanence, which is said, as many of you know, that in the teaching, having direct access to impermanence, a felt experience, not an idea of, yeah, things are impermanent, I've read that, I know that, I've seen that, but the knowing of it as it's happening now, you know, when we get calm enough or unified enough the mind that we can experience this, this is known to be liberating. It brings the heart's release. So that's very powerful. But another thing that can become very obvious with time on the cushion, I guess, it's... In one text, the Buddha says, paraphrasing again, I hope it's okay with you. He says, when a well-trained disciple, or a well... Yeah, when somebody was practiced, a well-trained mind, when a well-trained person with a well-trained mind feels the earth element. So that's a language that talks about hardness or softness or harshness, or the earth element is an old archaic maybe way to talk about pressure on the butt now. You know? So when a well-trained mind feels the earth element, like we do now, we have access to that. You know, the pressure on your legs or feet or he recognizes it, or she recognizes it, as earth. Earth element, pressure. Pressure. And stops there. When the untrained mind, sometimes it's called the worldling, so us, maybe a lot of the time, when the worldling feels the earth element, the pressure, they might recognize it as earth, you know, like, oh, hardness. You know, we might not use the word earth, you know, that's not how we think of it, but we know there's hardness on the legs. Or, but they go, she or he goes a step further and thinks it's mine, my earth element, that this pressure is mine. And of course, you know, like on the everyday life, we will think, yeah, that's my pressure or my movement. But on a deeper level, and that takes, I think, a calming of the mind again in this sustained attention, there's this thing that happened where, oh, there is movement. And because it's gone, once it's, you know, this moment of moving my hand is gone, I also kind of intuitively, penetratively understand that it's not mine. But it did happen. It's not mine because it's gone. It did happen. It was known. There was the wind element, you could say in this language, or air element of movement. But it's not being experienced anymore. It's not me. Anyway, that's kind of deep stuff, but it's amazing how it can relieve us. That's movement like this, but if there is I sit here, let's say for me, and sometimes I sit with difficult emotion. Let's say there's some anxiety. I'm sitting here, there's some anxiety. It has a physical manifestation, right? Pressure on the chest or pounding in the heart, you know? And if I take it very personal, like, I'm anxious, I've always been anxious, I'm so anxious, why am I anxious, you know? I'm having a beautiful trip in BC and now I'm here anxious. Yeah, I don't know what the mind can do, you know? There can be a lot of story making around that. But if I come to a practice very simple of just being attentive, oh, pressure on the chest feels like this. Pressure, earth element. I speak that language now, I've learned it a bit. Earth element. Then it becomes really simple. Oh, earth element. I don't have to take it personal, get rid of it, you know. And that's kind of a revolution of the mind heart there. Because I don't get in fight with it. It's just, oh, it feels it pressure. It's not easy to feel. It's unpleasant. There's a sense for me that there's space for caring to come in. Oh, caring about the earth element in the body. It's extremely simple, but it... yeah, it makes... Anyway, I don't know if there's something in there for you. But that's like one of the ways that attention to the body can come. Talking about emotions, it says that the physicality, and then I'll try to move on to something else after. Last thing I'll say about this, the physicality, the being embodied, it has it comes from four, in the teaching it says it comes from four different places, I'll call it like this. It comes from nutriment, the fact that we feel the hardness, movement, it's because there was an intake of food, and fire is the other one. So there's the digestion, transformation, turns this into energy, so there's heat radiation that I can feel as I sit here, or I, you know. There's an aliveness. But there's two other aspects that might be of interest to you. One is, it says that the physicality that we feel, it can come because of intention. So, for example, you had the intention to come and hear a Dharma talk tonight. So it's a mind thing, intention. It's the mind as the intention. Let's go and hear this fellow person do their spiel. And so there was this intention, so now you're feeling this pressure in your butt. That's the result of this. If you had the intention to go run, you would be feeling, you know, in a different way, the earth element. That's interesting to know. The one that I liked, okay, so I told you the nutriment, the fire, the intention, And the other one is the consciousness, quality of consciousness. So as I was just describing, if in my mind, let's say there is fear, my experience of the body is going to be very different than if there is love or kindness or, even in meditation, sometimes people will describe like feeling very light, like almost a few experiences before levitation. You know, feel like, wow, this body is so light. Because there's so much ease in the mind and so little story making. So the mind is open and kind of sometimes people talk about the mind that is luminous. Physically, they say, wow, it seemed like the daylight came in, but it was just eyes closed. There was a physical experience of brightness in the mind and lightness in the body. That is because of the quality of the mind changes the quality of the experience in the body. If my heart is heavy and dejected, it's going to feel very different. It's not the only way that I feel what I feel, but in the body. But it does that. That's very interesting to me. On the day after his enlightenment, the Buddha is full awakening. What is that? That's clarification of all confusion, the Buddha was left the place where he was practicing and decided to go and talk with people about this practice. He was walking on the path and he met another being, and the person who saw them, they said, wow, what's with your face, your complexion, you're glowing, man. Who are you? What's going on with you? And the Buddha said, I'm awake. I got it. I got the joke. I understood the misunderstandings, but the first sign for the person who met him in the text, you read this, he says, your complexion, you're glowing. There's something about you. You don't look like a human being. And it's interesting. I think it's the quality of his mind made it like this. Sometimes we meet people who have a lot of, let's say, benevolence. You might have met somebody in your life who had lots of friendliness to them. And even physically, we can feel impacted by the quality of their mind. There was a teacher that I would see, and I spent some time with this teacher. He was Burmese, and obviously he had done his work to some extent. When I was coming to see him, I would bow 3 times before reporting on my practice. So I would first, just getting in the room, something was changing for me. I felt like almost like in love or something. Like I had my own references that were probably not exactly appropriate, but I felt like I'm going to see the beloved or the lover or something like this, this old wise man, and I was getting all excited when I was getting in the room. Was like, whoa, it's so, I think his mind has had an effect on my physical body and my mind. Anyway, I would bow 3 times, and the last time I would lift my head and was supposed to start my report about my practice, and I would just lift my head and look in his eyes, and it would be like kind of blank. I was like, and then he would do this, like, come on, give your report, and then, oh, my world would come back, after a few seconds, my world would come back together. But I think he must have felt very special inside of him, and so much so that it radiated, anyway, the quality of the mind. So that's amazing, when I think that's what we can do about with this mind, stop, few minutes a day, or several maybe, if we can afford that, and calm the mind down, and clean the mind in a way, and so that we can find more ease in the body, more, not that it's going to be like perfectly comfortable and healthy, not like this, but some kind of ease of presence, so much so that one day it could have an impact on somebody else. So instead of creating trouble around us, we could create some beauty. Anyway, I'm talking a lot about the body. The Buddha used this image that I love. when he talked about the body, sometimes he talked. He used the image of foam, like sea foam. And you guys know about sea foam more than I do. Actually, I've been watching sea foam in the last few days. Now I was had the chance to go to the Pacific Rim National Reserve there, and I was watching the foam. And I was like, it's amazing. 2,600 years ago, the Buddha was talking about the body as foam, not as a solid thing, like we feel it a lot of the time, but as something that has the nature to change. This body sitting here, the body that will be standing or sitting in the car later on the bicycle, is a different experience. And so the Buddha was pointing to this, saying, like, the body is like foam. This image of something changing, something that has a lot of space. And like now physics sees the body as foam also, you know, as lots of space in it, lots of, yeah? I'm amazed that 2,600 years ago, without the microscope, with just being attentive to experience, which is what, you know, meditation is about, being attentive to here and now, that you can discover in experience that this body is like foam, is changing all the time. Like now I have a cold, and the experience of chest is so different. You know, from the experience of chest a week ago or 3 days ago. It's very different in there. And if I make it even more tiny at the level of meditation, is the experience of chest 30 seconds ago, how is it different from the experience of chest now? Well, the big difference is the other one doesn't exist. It's gone. The experience of chest now exists and is gone. Maybe I choose just another aspect of experience to than the body, just to go in a different way. So, okay, maybe I talked about this world making, so I'll say a few words on that. So one way that I, one image that the Buddha used that I like to mix the world making of thinking of me and tomorrow and last week and 10 years ago. And the Buddha used an image also. He talked about the banana tree trunk. He says the banana tree looks like a tree. It looks solid. It looks like a, but in the core, it's empty. And so when it bears its fruit, after it falls flat, it looked like a tree, but it's not a tree. It's hollow in the middle, or it looks solid and strong, but there's nothing in the middle. And so this image could be used. It fits the teaching that we're sitting here in meditation, attending to the body, and then there's this old resentment that comes back. Can't believe they did that to me, or I did that to them. This is a big production of like a banana tree, bananas. I see this like this these days. It's a big production, and it's very intense, seems very real, and then suddenly it falls back on the, because somebody, you know, the instructor of meditation says, come back to your body now. It's like, oh, yeah, I come back here, and I'm like, wow. There was a production of a big banana production here. Sometimes even as a student told me, he says, it's actually more plantations for me. It's like one after the other, another one. It's like, and the mind is like this. I'll sit here like, this happened to me last year. And so that's a whole banana tree. And then it'll fall flat, but it'll lead to that banana. Like, but in the, you know, I hope it doesn't happen again, because if that happens again, I'm going to, and then there's futuring here, you know, and then it produces this whole thing, and I'm miserable, and I suffer, and that's the fruit. It's a kind of a positive image, but usually it's ends up, the fruit is suffering, you know. It's like I'm all tied up now, and my consciousness has, you know, mustered this stuff, and now the physicality has followed, you know, I'm all agitated, you know, and then it falls flat. So that's one thing that I like to see in meditation. I sit there and I just see the production of bananas, you know. And this is just what it is. I like the image because it has something kind of comical almost about it, you know. And so it helps maybe not take so seriously the production of the mind. It's a generation of mind. And often we think it's reality. It's reality, but what is it? The thoughts are very, they seem sticky, they seem serious, but really it's just something that passes in the mind. And in the meditation process, what we're invited to do is not to be caught in the content, and that's not an easy thing to do, but it's an amazing thing to do, is to actually become aware that thinking is happening, that the mind is generating ideas. Instead of the content, the process, so liberating. So instead of Pascal, you're like this, this is how you are, and your mom told you, and she was right, and this is how you're, and you'll always be like this, and thoughts are passing by, you know? If I can become aware of that, suddenly I'm not in that story anymore. I'm just seeing this banana tree production. That can be very liberating. Oh, you know, the Joseph Goldstein that Brooke was referring to earlier, I think says, does it come from him? Anyway, somebody wise somewhere saying, the thoughts of your mother are not your mother. It's so liberating to recognize this, or, you know, mother or anybody else. But, you know, when this is the production, the generation of something, and it's a mind produced thing. But for us, it's so not often. You know, we think of somebody and they're there and this is the reality, but the freedom that comes from seeing a production as just that, you know, banana tree production. Yeah. Okay, so a little break, and I'll ring the bell to invite us back in like maybe 6 or 7 minutes. Okay.